From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. By the way, congrats to the San Francisco Giants winning the pennant, playing the Detroit Tigers, who won the pennant, and the start of the World Series on Wednesday night. Here we go. Baseball in the fall. Next hour, Changing Yourself with Eldon Taylor. Here's what's happening. Well, don't predict earthquakes in Italy. Six Italian scientists and an ex-government official have been sentenced to 6 years in prison over the 2009 deadly earthquake in Italy. A regional court found them guilty of multiple manslaughter. Prosecutors said the defendants gave a falsely reassuring statement before the quake, while the defense maintained, hey, there's no way to predict major earthquakes. It was a 6.3 magnitude quake. It devastated an Italian town, killed 309 people. Well, the last of the 2012 presidential debates held at Lynn University in Florida tonight, Dr. Jerome Corsi. Well, Jerry, this is it. Now the election in a few weeks. I think President Barack Obama probably did the best he did tonight than the other two debates. What do you think?
I think so. I was at the debate tonight. It was in Boca Raton as press reporting on the debate. And I think it's probably a tie in the final analysis. Both Governor Romney and Barack Obama made some important points. I think from Governor Romney's position, the looking presidential test, I think he passed that test. And I'm not sure President Obama changed anyone's mind or Governor Romney. I think it was, again, domestic issues, the economy, even entered into this debate on foreign policy. I think foreign policy is going to be the ultimate decider for most people. And this third debate was extremely interesting. But I doubt if, George, if it's going to be decisive.
I think you might be right, Jerry. It's going to be a close election. We're going to find out in a few weeks who the next president of the United States will be, won't we?
It's going to be an extremely close election. It's going to come down to a few states, and I would encourage everybody listening to go vote.
Jerry, thank you so much. Jerry also writes for WorldNet Daily. Now, we will have special guests on during election night, experts, futurists, a numerologist, to discuss how the next 4 years will be and who will lead us. Thank you so much again, Jerry. Cuba's revolutionary former leader Fidel Castro has written a strongly worded article condemning persistent rumors that he is on his deathbed. The 86-year-old attacked international media lies, as he calls it, and published photos of himself in Cuba's state media to show that he's okay. He said he was in good health and could not even remember the last time he had a headache. Russell Means, a former American Indian Movement activist who helped lead a 1973 uprising against the U.S. government and appeared in several Hollywood films, has died. He was 72 years old. Means died early Monday at his ranch in South Dakota. Means announced in August of 2011 that he had developed inoperable throat cancer. Means led the armed occupation of the South Dakota town of Wounded Knee, a 71-day siege that included several gun battles with federal officers to protect what he says was the U.S. government's treatment of Native Americans and demand that the government honor its treaties with Indian tribes. Millions of people using Android apps that can be tricked into revealing personal data, according to research. Scientists tested 13,500 Android apps and found that almost 8% of them failed to protect bank accounts and social media logins. Here's our expert, Lauren Weinstein, on. Well, now, how does this happen, Lauren?
Yeah, well, I should start off by saying, of course, Android comes from Google, and just in the interest of full disclosure, I am doing some work with Google right now, so I want to be clear that what I'm saying is my opinion. I'm not speaking for them, of course.
Understand.
I actually read that paper in some depth over the last couple of days, and unfortunately, what it's actually saying is disturbing in general. In fact, it's really not an Android problem that it's talking about. What it is discussing is what are really systemic problems in our security infrastructure that are used on the web, not just with smartphones, but on desktops, even on Macs. It's problems in the underlying the SSL, TLS infrastructure, the certificate infrastructure. It has to do with weaknesses in the algorithms, but more than that, it's weaknesses in the way that programmers are implementing them. There's this, always this battle between flexibility and security, and if you go too far in one direction or the other, you have a problem. And this is not the kind of thing that is going to be easily fixed. It's a facet of an overall issue of security, and it's going to take a lot of work, not just for Android, because it's really not an Android problem isolated. It's actually across everything that uses these security protocols.
It's an incredible story. Lauren, do you have about 30 minutes to hang on the line with me?
Sure.
Okay. I want to talk with you a little bit more about this. Lauren Weinstein with us, and possibly take a few calls. This is an incredible story. The crux of all of this is, what can you do, and who can you trust with all this kind of technology? Nissan Motor Company, by the way, recalling 13,000 of its top-selling Altima sedans in the United States because bolts that may not have been tightened properly during production could fall off, increasing the risk of a crash, according to U.S. safety regulators. Researchers in the United States have been shocked to discover a beluga whale whose vocalizations were remarkably close to human speech. Now, while dolphins have been taught to mimic the pattern and durations of sounds in human speech, no animal has spontaneously tried such mimicry. Let's not count parakeets and things like that. But researchers have heard a 9-year-old whale named Nock making sound octaves below normal in clipped bursts that sound almost human. Listen in. How about that? Just absolutely incredible. That's a whale, not a person. A chunk of a meteorite struck the house of a San Francisco Bay Area resident, landing her in her backyard. After a meter streaked through the sky on Wednesday evening, Lisa Weber found the 2-inch rock weighing 63 grams in her backyard on Saturday. It could have been much worse. Up next, we're going to talk a little bit more with Lauren Weinstein about how technology can screw up our privacy. Lauren is next with us on Coast to Coast AL. And welcome back to Coast. Hey, let me give you the phone numbers, by the way. We're going to take some extra calls from you with so much happening in the news. I'm also going to be sprinkling this hour by taking in some phone calls with you. West of the Rockies, 800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 800-825-5033. First-time caller line is 818-501-4721. The wild card line, 818-501-4109 as well. Our international line, if you're way out there, is 800-893-0903. And, of course, the very special lines for Skype, George97313. George97313. We'll take some of your phone calls this hour as well. Lots going on, of course. I had an opportunity to go to Minneapolis this weekend, where I was a guest at the Paradigm Conference. I just had a wonderful time there. I got to meet a number of just superb individuals. Giorgio Tsoukalos was there, of course, from Ancient Aliens. And he's going to be in St. Louis, where I am right now, on Sunday at a special event. And he asked me if I would introduce him Sunday night. So he's going to be at the Sheraton City Center in St. Louis. The event starts at 7 o'clock. He's got a meet and greet at 5 to 6. If you're interested, you can just call the Sheraton down there and go down there. I'll introduce Giorgio. I'll be there. I'm going to do this as a favor to him. And, of course, Lauren Weinstein with us. And we're going to take your phone calls as well as we talk about just all kinds of things, including how technology is affecting our own privacy. Lauren, with the way that this technology is going this way, I happen to have an Android. I like it. It works very well for me. We, too, are working on a special Android app for our Coast Insiders. Can technology go too far where, you know, people can hack into your mobile bank accounts and things like that?
Well, we're always looking at trade-offs, right? I mean, it's hard to imagine going back to a time when all our banking was done in a printed bank book, right? I mean, remember when you'd go up there and they'd hand stamp it and do all of that. we're dependent on being able to do these things online now. So it's really not a question of technology going too far. It's a question of making sure that it's implemented properly. And, of course, there's a tendency sometimes to jump ahead of that. The services are made available before they're really completely thought through and all of the implementation details are really tied down. But there's no going back. There's never in history really been a time that we've gone backwards on technology, except perhaps during the Black Death, and that's probably not, you know, the way you want to do it. That said, there are situations where people do take shortcuts with technology, and there's other situations where it's just that we learn more about them as time more about technology as time goes by, and that's really what's happening in the security realm. The security protocols that are used on the internet are basically good protocols, but as the power of computers that are in individuals' hands becomes more and more potent, exploits and attacks that weren't practical even 2 or 3 or 5 years ago start to become practical now, and we have to upgrade these systems to keep pace.
Well, there's no question about that. Now, if, for example, I'm not going to give the name of my bank, but I've got a mobile app on my phone. You know, I do some transactions that way. Is that safe, Lauren?
Yeah, it's normally going to be safe. I was thinking what the best single suggestion is to give to anyone, not just using Android, but using iPhone, using RIM, anybody that uses these systems that depend on these same security protocols. And really one good rule of thumb is to try to make sure that you use access points that are reliable. Now, when you go over the mobile network, when you're going over your carrier's network, whatever your phone carrier is, that's probably pretty secure because there's encryption on that above and beyond the ordinary internet encryption. When you go to Wi-Fi, that's when the vulnerabilities start to increase, and that's when it becomes more important to try to pick Wi-Fi access points that you trust. So if you're, you know, if you're in a Starbucks or a hotel or somewhere where there's, you know, probably reasonable security on the basic system, at least compared with a random Wi-Fi access point you might find floating through the air, those are the kind of sites to go for, the ones that seem like they're being operated by reliable people. On the other hand, if you see a Wi-Fi access point that says, you know, its ID is open Wi-Fi, come on in, I mean, that might suggest it's one to avoid. So most of these problems have to do with what are called man-in-the-middle attacks. So you have to have a bad player getting in the middle who knows how to exploit these things. If you have a good connection, if you have reliable access points, you're much less likely to have a man-in-the-middle to attack, even if there are vulnerabilities in the underlying protocols.
About a month and a half ago or so, Lauren, I had a transaction done that was discontinued because the vendor wasn't able to do what they needed to do for me, but they took out a chunk of money out of my account. And though it was an accident, it took me 3.5 weeks to get it back in by the bank and by them. What a disaster. I mean, you know, I got to tell you, had I not had a little extra money in that account, I would have been up the creek.
Yeah, part of the reason that happens isn't technical, it's greed, because the longer they can hold on to money in the cases of situations like that where there's problems that people bring, when there's disputes, they have the money, they're earning interest on it, they're able to invest it, and you can't. So it's real common, even if there's a situation where it could have been cleared up technically very fast, where it can take days and days, or even, like you say, it can sometimes even take weeks, just because they want to hold on to that money. And even if the individual amount of money with any given person isn't very large, if you consider all the people that's probably happening to at any given moment, it adds up to some really nice chunks of change.
Can you tell me exactly what you believe to be the biggest problem facing all this kind of privacy technology?
I worry most these days about governments. Because governments are in the position to access things in ways that most other entities can't. Even if you have the best security system in the world, the best security protocols, the best software on your smartphone and on your PC, that doesn't protect you, for example, from keyloggers. It doesn't protect you from what are called black bag jobs, where people actually enter a premises, plant something on the computer, grab the data that you're typing before it's encrypted, or your communications before it's encrypted, and then move it off that way. I'm not saying that something like that is widespread, but we're seeing now around the world more and more governments that are attempting to leverage the internet for political purposes, and not necessarily just in governments that we might consider to be enemies of the U.S. or unfriendly to the U.S., in Western countries too. And this is something that's of great concern to many of us now, because we just see governments starting to take the attitude that repression of free speech and interception of communications should just become a common everyday occurrence as long as the government's doing it. There's a lot of hypocrisy there too, because you see governments getting upset, for example, at companies doing certain things, but the governments are doing it anyway. And so the governments, when they do it, it's okay. When the companies do it, it's not okay. In terms of use of cookies and things like that. So it gets very complicated and fairly depressing rapidly.
Yeah, it really does, Lorne. And are other, countries experiencing similar problems and dissatisfactions?
Yeah, I'd say so. It's becoming pretty much global. And if you, even in countries like that you wouldn't even think of normally, like India, for example, the government's really cracking down there massively. There are countries like Thailand and Turkey, and a lot of this is political. Some of it is religiously driven. It's just basically a global phenomenon. What you have now is governments saying they want to crack down on the internet, and since so many people are now dependent on the internet for speech, that seems to be the logical place for them to try to crack down.
I think so. Lorne, what's new with you and your own work?
Well, it's always a matter of trying to stay ahead of the curve here. I mean, every time you turn around, there's
something's happening.
Something else coming down the pipe. This whole internet freedom of speech area is a really big one right now. Just because there's so many things that are happening. Recently, of course, one of the big controversies has been over that video, the anti-Islamic video that caused such a global storm, and questions, should that have been taken down? Should it not have been taken down? What was it responsible for? What was it not responsible for? What impact will that have on governments trying to impose censorship? All kinds of things like that. And so I think I must have written 4 or 5 postings in a very short period of time on that, just because, not so much because of that video itself, but because what it implies, what it could be a catalyst for in terms of governments that have kind of been waiting in the wings to make repressive moves. Maybe this sort of gives them an excuse to do it.
Is there a major difference, Lorne, between folks who are getting iPhones and folks who are using the Android system?
I'm not so sure there's a difference between the people per se, but there's a difference in the ecosystem, in the environment, that probably kind of selects what kind of folks are going to be more interested in one versus the other. If you get out from under the coolness factor of the latest phone and all of that, the Apple ecosystem is a lot more controlled. It's a closed system where Apple has to approve every application, at least in theory. And it's a closed environment. It's not a very open environment. The Android ecosystem is much more open. There's a lot more freedom for developers, and of course that has implications in both directions. If it's more open, you possibly have more chances for bad implementations and possible security problems. And yet on the iPhone side, it's using the same protocols, and ultimately, even with their approval process, you still have the same possibility of exploits and things, because those approvals aren't necessarily looking for security problems. They tend to be looking for whether or not those programs kind of fit Apple's model for the marketplace. So when push comes to shove, from a security standpoint, it all kinds of evens out, between all of them. But all that really means is that we have a lot of work to do. There has to be more work done on automated scanning of code to try to prevent some of the more obvious exploits and things. Some of that's happening right now, both on the Apple side and on the Android side. So there are people working on this, but of course, when there are security problems, it never seems to come fast enough.
Well, that is absolutely true, Lorne. Stick with us. We're going to be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. We will take some phone calls, pull out your phones, and start making that call. Technology at its best. technology at its worst. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour on Coast to Coast, looking forward to this. Eldon Taylor joins us. We're going to talk about his new work, Self-Hypnosis and Subliminal Technology, but it's a guide on how to change yourself, this fascinating program. And we're going to come back in a moment with Lauren Weinstein and take phone calls on technology, so you get ready to make those calls. And welcome back to Coast with Lauren Weinstein as we talk about high technology, your phone, your computers. We'll go to your calls in a moment. Lauren, I must admit, though, in spite of all the possible problems and privacy issues and theft of data, I do like the technology. It has made life so much simpler for all of us.
Yeah, not only simpler, but ultimately it saves a lot of money. I mean, there's when people can more efficiently access information. I mean, you think, you know, I talk to people sometimes and I say, you got to remember, there was, if you go back 15 years or 20 years, if you had a health question, if you even just wanted to know a piece of TV trivia, you couldn't just walk over to a little box on your desk or hanging on your belt and instantly get the answer. I mean, there's so many important ways that this technology now, by bringing all this information to us, has changed our lives that it's easy to kind of forget what it was like before you had these kinds of websites and search engines and things like that, where factual information was always at your fingertips. I mean, even health, I think about health issues a lot because, you know, if you imagine what it would be like for someone who suddenly had some symptoms, they can at least go to the internet now, they can go to a reputable website, and they can get some clue as to what's going on. So these are enormous changes, and perhaps because they're so enormous, it's sometimes hard to keep in perspective how much has really changed for the positive, for the good with all of this.
See, I'm wondering, Lauren, and you speculate on this for me. Let's assume an X-flare hits us, and it takes down, if not the whole grid, at least a portion of it, where computers are screwed up or satellites are screwed up, and we can't get, you know, our cell phone calls or use our smartphones or use much of the internet. What happens to society?
It probably won't be pretty if it's a really intense event. There are certainly systems that are reasonably hardened against these kinds of things. I mean, but most of them are in the military realm, in the government realm. They're not in the broader world. I think part of the problem is that we don't really know what kind of an event it would take to catastrophically damage systems as opposed to just temporarily blind them. It's like the situation we have now with solar flares, right?
And we're getting little ones now, as a matter of fact.
Right. Where when you know they're coming, and of course we have satellites out there specifically to give early warning, they literally turn the satellites around and take other protective measures because they're very vulnerable. What would happen if we really got a really, really big burst and couldn't do anything about it, the power grid overloaded and things like that? My guess is that for anything that's likely, there could be temporary disruptions, but probably not catastrophic, where you go dark for long periods of time. Could something happen where you go dark for long periods of time? Yeah. I mean, we could get a neutron burst, right, that would kill everything on Earth.
That's right.
Is that likely to happen anytime soon? Probably not. But these are all within the realm of possibility.
All right. Let's go to the phones now. First-time caller. We've got David in Fullerton, California with us. Hey, David. Thanks for calling.
Hey, George. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure.
Hi, Lauren. How are you doing?
Yeah, hi. Fine. Thanks.
Okay. Make this as short as possible. I'm 34. I do not have a computer. I don't want anything to do with computers. Needless to say, I don't have an iPhone or any of that. A long time ago, I seen the dependency upon technology at a pretty young age, in my early 20s, I think it was. And from that point on, I said, nope. I'm not going to do it, and I've gotten this far along in life without having to have a computer, and I see no problem with the way I'm living, and, you know, there is a lot of good that can come out of it.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
What do you do for a living?
I'm actually unemployed at the moment, recovering from cancer, so...
The reason I ask is because, just as a practical matter, in terms of job possibilities, it's really very difficult now without having computer skills. I mean, you can certainly live one way or another without them and even without computers, but it can be very, very restrictive, and there's a decision that needs to be made about whether that's necessarily the way, you know, people want to live. Of course, it's up to every individual.
Oh, sure. And I've had quite a few jobs in the past 7, 8 years or so where I've had to learn some computer skills on the fly and learned really quick and did it according to the job that I needed to do and got by just fine with that. And, you know, that is so far, you know, everything's gone, you know, gone pretty good. Never really ran into problems as far as really, you know, in that sense. But I do have a question for you. Where do you think the tipping point is of no return, where we're so dependent on all this technology and seeing where the government is poking and prodding in there and all these hackers are starting to really rear their ugly heads and, you know, steal people's identities and getting into the bank systems and all this other things that are happening. In your opinion, what do you think, where would you put that line in the sand of where
Well, Lorne, I don't think we can go back at this point. Do you?
Yeah, we're in fact, I was just thinking we're many, many years past that tipping point. we're in it now, up to our necks, as the saying goes, and that's for all the good that it brings and for the risks that it brings, and that's just the nature of technology marching through the centuries. You normally can't go backwards, and you know, George, as you were saying, the dependencies are very real, and that's why people worry about the security and reliability of these systems. But as a practical matter, we have them, we're going to keep them, and there's just no going back.
Let's go to Ryan, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Ryan, thank you. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Hi, Lauren. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a Toast Insider and a great promoter of the show.
Thank you.
I just wanted you all to maybe entertain the idea that and this coincides with the subliminal aspect that Lauren has brought up, that I hear often on the show talk about RFID chips and all of these things. And I was wondering if, you know, our phones were being used as a subliminal RFID chip. And I'll take my answer up here. Thanks.
Well, it may not be all that far-fetched. Lauren, go ahead.
Well, the thing is, phones are, you know, really dumb. I mean,
well, why do they call them smartphones?
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking, you know, most of these phones, in terms of their capability, are limited to what, you know, what the applications do. I think what he may have been going after, you know, is not in terms of RFID, but in terms of, you know, what are the possibilities of them being tapped and monitored and things like that, and. That's a real issue. It's not so much a matter of the intelligence of the phones. It's a matter of their flexibility more than anything else. So the question becomes, where are you going to worry? What are you going to worry about the most? Are you going to worry about an application that's put on your phone that sneaks its way onto your phone to tap and listen to what you do? Or are you going to be more worried about perhaps the government going to your phone carrier and listening in that way? These are all real issues, and as this technology has become more capable, it has become, you know, more of these possibilities have become real. What are you going to do about it? Well, again, you're not going to get out from under it. I mean, there's just no way people are going to abandon this technology. So my usual answer to that is, you know, as I said earlier, I mean, my primary concern now is the way that governments around the world are really trying to crack down on these technologies. They're attempting to put in place laws that require that strong encryption systems be made vulnerable so that they can listen in. And I understand that, you know, the ostensible reasons they do this is for law enforcement and anti-terrorism and things like that. Everybody would agree with those.
Right.
But the problem is, once they start down that path, we find the use cases expanding and expanding and expanding. And we've already seen in some countries where they're being used for strictly political purposes and to keep current governments in power. So this is where you really have to watch, and then you wonder, well, what are you going to do about it? And that's where you have to start talking about international relationships and economic pressures and things like that to try to influence some of these things. Unfortunately, with these technologies, there's just no magic wands for the solutions, no magic wand solutions for the problems that they bring with them. I think the most important thing is to be aware of what the actual problems are so that you can educate yourself in various ways to understand what they are. And then there's a better chance, at least, of influencing the debate through your elected representatives or through organizations and things like that. If you try to hide your head under the sand like an ostrich, you're not going to get anywhere, and you're just going to start falling farther and farther behind, and those problems are still going to be there.
You know, and you're absolutely right, Lauren. The concern of these issues is not today. The concern is what could happen down the line. And, you know, in the hands of the wrong leader, in the hands of the wrong people in government, who knows what could happen if we have given away all our rights.
You've just hit the nail right on the head. And in fact, this is something that has to be repeated and yelled from the rooftops. No matter how much trust you have in any government currently, even if you or the next government or whomever, you have to remember that these technological systems, once they're put in place, and especially government surveillance regimes, once they're put into place and built into the hardware and built into the software, which is really what they want to do now, those systems will be available to future governments going far into the future. So it's those governments in the future that you have to think about. What would a tyrant, a real tyrant, do with those technologies that perhaps are being built in now for supposedly good purposes, but could be turned to truly evil purposes 10 years down the line or 20 years down the line? It's that future that we have to be so concerned about.
Steve in Ontario, Canada. Steve, you're on with Lauren Weinstein. Go ahead, Steven.
Taking my call, guys. I just have a couple of comments about the issue. I've been in IT for several years, and I believe that what's happened is we're creating software applications based on protocols that were written in the 1960s. There's over 1,000 well-known port numbers, and these port numbers are also readily available on the Internet. And, you know, 10, 15 years ago, you couldn't find anybody who, was capable of programming a Cisco router or switch. Now there's so many people with the ability, and they can't get a lot of jobs. So they're out there writing code. They're software developers. They're programmers, and I think what we've done is we've based all our infrastructure on either Unix, Linux, or a PC type of software. There's viruses that specifically target hardware. Stuxnet, Flame are just examples that are also readily available to be downloaded and modified.
Yeah, of course, it's worth noting that the primary target of viruses to date anyway has been Windows systems by far, by orders of magnitude.
That's correct.
But what you're saying is basically true in that many of the fundamental protocols that we use now, and I wouldn't say the 60s so much, but you know, in the decades that followed, the protocols were developed then with an eye toward the capabilities that were common at that time. So at one point, 56-bit encryption seemed great. Then we had to go to 128.
Well, we're still using TCP/IP. That's the main internet protocol. Without it, it doesn't exist. So
TCP/IP is not the problem in terms of security. It has issues in terms of speed and things like that as networks have gotten faster and the IP version 6 changes the it solves a bunch of these problems, but you can't get out from under the fact that there you have to deal with legacy environments. You can't pull everyone's hardware back. You can't replace it all at once. So it's always going to be a matter of incremental change. The question is, are resources being allocated appropriately, not just by individuals but by governments for security purposes and things like that, to fix the vulnerable systems on a priority basis? And unfortunately, that doesn't happen most of the time.
Let's go to Texas and talk with Frank. Frank, you're on with Lauren Weinstein.
Yes, sir. George, I'm sorry, a little nervous. It's my first time calling as well.
Okay, Frank.
How are you doing to your guest, Lawrence? It's an honor to talk to you, George. I'm a new listener.
Sure thing. Good to have you with us.
Yeah, hi. And I'm very excited about the show. I love it. Absolutely love it here in Texas. I wanted to ask your guest if he knows any new developments on the Stellar Wind project that has been issued by the National Security Agency.
Anything on a solar wind project, Lauren, that you might know about?
It doesn't ring a bell offhand.
We'll check into that, though, Frank. It might be a pretty good story, especially if Homeland Security's behind it. Who knows what's up for that, huh? Linda in High Point, North Carolina, welcome to the program. Hi, Linda.
Hello, George. Thank you for taking my call.
You are
George,
welcome.
I'm a senior citizen. I'm 65.
You sound 35, Linda. My gosh.
Oh, I'm 65. My only income is my Social Security check. And beginning in March, they're going to make everybody that gets government benefits go through a bank with a debit card. And I'm not tech savvy at all. Does he have any tips on how to choose a bank to safeguard my money? And how safe would it be against hackers?
Well, these problems can't occur. Go ahead, Lauren. We got about a minute left.
Yeah, I think the most important thing, these systems are all very similar, and the government has laid down certain basic requirements that they all have to meet. I think the most important thing to watch out for when choosing a bank for that is make sure that you don't get hit with all kinds of weird hidden fees and things like that. Because when you're dealing with these debit card systems, sometimes there are fees for doing this and fees for doing that, and hard to get the residue money out, and things of that nature. So that would be the most important thing that I think would be involved in making the switch over to that. And I hope people are going to take the time to read over, what different banks offer in those areas. There's government rules, but I think you're going to find that some banks do things in slightly different ways. It's really important to understand the details.
Lauren, take a quick second to give out your website, if you would. We have the link for you, but go ahead.
Yeah, the easiest way to find me is just from www.vortex.com. That leads to my blog. That leads to my Google Plus postings and all kinds of things like that. And it's also the easiest to remember. So
super. Thanks, Lauren. Lauren Weinstein, a little bit of privacy, a little bit of smartphones. We'll be back in a moment. We just might change your life on Coast to Coast AM.